Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Erev Pesach. Been a full day. I had to do the Mechira, of course, and the burning and all the rest of it. Now I have a few minutes at the beginning of the afternoon. I hope it's not too late in Israel. Maybe it is. But I want to say a few more words about the Haggadah before we close this down to get ready for Yontov. Always, thanks to the support, encouragement, and sponsorship of Mishpachas Stefanski, who I believe are being in Bnei Brak. And just a few points. And that is, you know, we always say there's a physical galus and a spiritual galus. I hate to use the word spiritual, but that's what they say. And I've talked about it in the past when you talk about Shabbos HaGadol. The first thing you need to do is have a sense of self-identity. Like I mentioned yesterday, you have to have your own narrative. If you go by someone else's narrative or someone else's gods, as they used to call in the old days, then it's hopeless because you don't realize, you know, who you are. That's what countries do when they try to assimilate minorities and they're successful at it. I mean, the history's full of this. That the majority, one way or the other, is able to assimilate the minority. And the minority doesn't even feel their former identity. I mean, the USA in the old days was very good at that. And I don't mean in a bad way necessarily. It's up to each minority to maintain their own identity. Before you had the great influx of people from the third world, this and that and the other, the US was pretty good at maintaining such things. Now, I'll just give you an example off the top of my head. Who is the American commander-in-chief in World War II? Eisenhower. Eisenhower was German. You know, same by ancestry. He didn't feel German at all. It's a good thing. He didn't feel German at all. I mean, he's aware, biologically, he came from Germany, but it don't mean anything. He was American. You know, same, didn't identify with the German stuff at all. You have this a lot of times. So the Egyptians, this is part of their agenda. As far as I can tell from the different sources, the Egyptians were conflicted when it comes to Klal Yisrael. The way every country said a Jewish minority is conflicted when it comes to Klal Yisrael, especially when there are a large number of Jews, because on the one hand they want to convert them and assimilate them into their own culture, on the other hand they don't want all these Jews running around without any restrictions. This happened over and over again in Jewish history, and it seems that that was the case in Egypt, because on the one hand part of Vayishrutzu Vayatzmim Mod Maod, so the Jews did quite well. Vayatzmod Mod means they made serious money. Vatimalei Arts are some, they're all over the place. And there's Chazals that say they stopped circumcising because they want to be like the Egyptians. So they were making pretty good headway, Mitzrayim, before the enslavement came along. They're making pretty good headway at assimilating the Jews. Ad kedei kach, that the Jews wouldn't feel themselves as Jewish. Again, they might know as a biological fact they're descended from Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, but that wouldn't mean anything to them. You understand? And identify totally with Egypt. Now, it says, "Havcha Kadosh Baruch Hu Zavah She Mitzvim Over Some L'Sino." That's what the Medrash Rabbah says. The Ribbono Shel Olam converted the positive feelings into negative feelings. There's a plus and a minus to that, obviously. The negative side is all that physical suffering and throwing babies in the river and all that terrible stuff, which was horrible. The positive side is it prevented the Jews from assimilating into Egypt, right? But it's a funny story because, consider this well, according to our tradition, according to Seder Olam, how long was the actual slavery? 86 years, which I think the Gematria HaTeva and Elohim and all that stuff, we've done that before in my former stuff. 86 years. Consider this well. So what happened? The Jews were doing okay in Egypt, and all of a sudden the Egyptians turned on them, and they basically said they're taking over the country, which there was a little bit of truth to, a little bit, and therefore they enslaved them, 6 years later, came the decree that threw the babies in the river. How do I know that? Moshe Rabbeinu was 80 years old when he went to Pharaoh. The whole slavery was 86 years. That means Moshe Rabbeinu was born in the sixth year of the slavery. Right? So that means that the Iker period of slavery actually occurred during the lifetime of Moshe. And, you know, when he was there, as we all know, he survived the attempt of Pharaoh to kill all the babies. But that was a special case. He didn't do that all 80 years. He did it at least, let me put it this way. You can't tell. It doesn't seem that they did it for 80 years. Chumash doesn't say how long it was, it lasted or didn't last. And then, you know, as always, there are different makoros and so forth. But it seems to be associated with the idea that you've heard already before, which is they heard that some deliverer of the Jews is born, and in order to make sure this kid wouldn't survive, they tried to drown him on the river, and Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, survived, as we know. So he was born early into the slavery period. That's just interesting. I don't think most people consider that. When Moshe was born, 6 years previously, his parents had not been slaves. Well, I mean, they were Levi, but you know, the Jews had not been slaves. It was rather recent. And I'm sure when it's recent, you know, it was very bitterly resented. And that's goof of why Paro, you know, threw the babies in the river, because the Jews are resentful. And any opportunity they have for changing this, they'll do. And the slavery was rather new. And so it's very much talking that, you know, a Jewish leader could step forward and lead the Jews out of this. But then 80 years went by. Because Moshe was 80 or 79, whatever, at the burning bush. 80 years went by. That's a long time. That's the Iker days of the slavery, right? And that's when it got Avodas Parach and all the rest of it. Ad kedei kach, that it says, Vayonchem ben Yisrael men avodah vayizaku. It couldn't take anymore. Right? Now, that's very interesting, because where are they holding, you know, emotionally or otherwise? See, this is the result of the contradictory policy of the Egyptians toward them. On the one hand, they're singled out for special treatment of slaves and torture and all the rest of it. On the other hand, you know, Pharaoh didn't want them to have their own religion and their own identity, which is why he says, Tich bada havoda al nosha biyasibo. You know, so is this, you know, interesting? This happened very often in history. I'm thinking of Russia right now. Russia, historically, has always been conflicted how to deal with the Jews. They should be positive to them, they should be negative to them. What they really want is the Jews should become part of Russia. You see? On the other hand, at the same time, they're worried if you gave the Jews complete civil rights, the Jews will take over the whole Russia. That was the mentality under the Tsars and afterwards. It really was. Putin is a weird guy. I mean, you know, I'm not speaking about him at this moment in a particularly negative way, because to the Jews in Russia, he hasn't been bad. But there's a great deal of what they call cognitive dissonance. It seems to me in Paris time also, ad kedei kach, that you have two contradictory stories. One is, Vayonchu ben Yisrael men avodah vayizaku, that the Jews cried out, they said, we can't take this anymore, help us, help us. And on the other hand, Mikos Ruchim avodah kasha, when Moshe Taka shows up a short time later, and he says, I got good news for your leaving. Lo shamal Moshe Mikos Ruchim avodah kasha. I thought you were Vayonchu. I thought you were crying out. So what's going on over here? Unless you say, I mean, if you want to give, you know, a basic and superficial answer, you know, you can always say they cried on the day of the funeral because they weren't working that day. The rest of the time, they're working so hard that you didn't have time to listen to anybody. I mean, I that's a push-up shot answer. But I think there's more than that, right? Kotzer Ruch doesn't simply mean that they were wiped out. It does mean that, but it's not all it means. Kotzer Ruch seems to connote, it's a very interesting expression, seems to connote a shortness of spirit, not just simply shortness of breath. And shortness of spirit is the idea that the slavery was working pretty well by that time, 80 years. to erase the Jewish self-identity. As I mentioned yesterday, to accept the Egyptian narrative, that's all they knew. And to accept the Egyptian God system, that's all they knew. You know, or almost all they knew. And that's the background of Pesach. Now, I was just looking. One of the Haggadahs I got a year or two ago was, and I always find it very interesting, from Toldos Yaakov Yosef, which is the number one disciple of the Baal Shem Tov. You'd be surprised, they're not Hasidic or anything like that. But they did a selection here of writings from his old Pirush and throughout the Chumash. I saw somewhere in the store they're starting to put out a good edition, Toldos Yaakov Yosef, the way I like it, with the Nekudos and the very full footnotes and all the rest of it. But I see it's going to be one of these situations where it takes them 100 years to, you know, to put out the whole business. You know, Bereishis 1, Bereishis 2, Bereishis 3, Bereishis 4, Shema, you know, like that. But there are selections here, and intelligent selections from his writings. And he uses Arizal-type language. This is the first Hasidic book ever published. And burnt. and he talks about the fact that, you know, Paro is... But it's all from the Arizal. It's not from him. You know, there's a Golas Adas, as they call it. And Paro is Ha'orif, backwards. In other words, you know, the back of your neck instead of front of your face. And... what do you call it? The lack of self-knowledge that the Jews had. That's the language that they use. Again, it's all from Lurianic sources, but it makes sense. It's something I came up with on my own without any Arizal stuff, simply because that's the history at that time. Right? He says, for example, Hineze Sibas Agolz Mitzrayim Shlo Yodu Chisrona Kimbor B'Kisri Ari. Right? They didn't know their own Chisronas, meaning... They couldn't, you know, evaluate themselves. They're messed up with their own identity. If they didn't know the Chesronim, they didn't know about the Bechiras Yosef. And the Golus that happened was a result of that physical manifestation, because that's Kabbalistic talk, that what happens in the metaphysical world spills over into the physical world and vice versa. So, to cut to all the chase of all that, we all know the first commandment says, Anuchi Hashem Elkecha Asher Tzitzich Me'eretz Mitzrayim. So why the double Lashon? So he says, they say, Me'eretz Mitzrayim is the mental stuff, and Beis Avodim was the physical stuff. That's the pshat when you see Ilu Lahutzi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Zavasinu, Mitzrayim, Onu B'neinu M'shubonim Me'il L'Par Mitzrayim. How do you know? The answer is, the answer they give, a typical answer, is if he hadn't taken us out of Mitzrayim, that's the mental goals, then we would be meshubed mentally to them, the same way that thousands, hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many Jews, let's say, for example, in Spain and Portugal today are Catholics, have been Catholics for many centuries, even though really, 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 they're Jewish by ancestry. You know what I mean? Her daughter, her son, go by the mother, matrilineal descent. And certainly if you go patrilineal descent, there's a ton of people in Spain and Portugal, as we know, you hear these stories all the time, who descended from Jews, but it doesn't mean anything. You see? If a person is a Spanish Catholic, and all they know is they light a candle on Friday night, that don't mean nothing. I mean, I understand the significance of it, but Lamai said they're Goyim. That's how they self-identify, and, you know, that's how they conduct their lives. It's not necessarily their fault, but that's a separate question. You see? So, Anuchi Hashem Elkecha Asher Tzitzich Me'eretz Mitzrayim, first I had to get you to, as I say, to get out of the Egyptian narrative. The Eretz Mitzrayim. Vatimulei Ha'aretz Osam. Now you understand, Timulei Ha'aretz Osam means the whole Egyptian consciousness was in them. That's the best way I can translate that that grammatically untranslatable phrase. Vatimulei Ha'aretz Osam. So in other words, mentally, you know, psychologically, mentally, they felt that way. And if you feel that way, you don't want to leave even if you're presented with an opportunity. Jewish history is replete with people who had an opportunity to escape somewhere. They didn't want to go. It's not only the 80% in Egypt. It happens overnight. It's a constant theme in Jewish history. As recently as when Khomeini took over in Iran and the Holocaust before that, and so on and so forth. We all know this. And so here you have Moshe Rabbeinu. You have the people complaining. And by Yom Chamenei Mincha Avoda, so the slaves couldn't stand the heavy labor. But that does not mean that their dream was to leave the country. Their dream was not to have the heavy labor. You understand? Their dream was not to have the heavy labor. The perfect world for them was not, we leave here and we go to Eretz Avos Chol Udvash and you get the Torah and I see and all the rest of it. No, that's not what they in the Madriga they were holding, that's not what they were looking for at all. If they could just have a little bit of relief from the terrible pain that they're having now, that's fine. Again, that's a constant in Jewish history. Isaac Leib Peretz's famous Yiddish story, A Bunch of Schwag, is all about that. And there are really dozens of examples. You know? Again, just off the top of my head, the Muranos in Spain and Portugal, many of them ran away. Where did they run away to? To France. Well, you're going to France. It's also to be Jewish in France also. Yeah, but they didn't have Inquisition. So in other words, in Spain or Portugal, if I secretly get together with other Jews on Friday night or Yom Tov, somebody will snitch on me. We could all get killed. If I go to France, we can live a double life very successfully. At the outside, we can go to Catholic Church. And Submission Zich, like I said, you can get together Friday night, Saturday morning, have Jewish stuff happening. And since there's no Inquisition, no governmentally organized snitch system on them, that would be perfect. Now, many of the rabbis at that time in the 15th, 16th, 1700s castigated him and said, like, why do you want to go away, run away from Spain to a country where you still can't practice Judaism in the street openly? You still have to do all the Avodah Zarah, all the Catholic stuff. And they say you should run away to, I don't know, Amsterdam or someplace like that where you can come out of the closet and be fully Jewish. They didn't want to do it. They didn't want to do it. They felt comfortable at their level. So the Avodim in Egypt wanted to get out of Beis Avodim. They didn't want to get out of Mitzrayim. You see? They wanted to get out of Beis Avodim. No, they wanted to have emancipation. But they didn't want to leave the country. Any more, for example, than the Negroes, as they called them at that time, this country, when they're emancipated, they said, let's go back to Africa and heck with all these white people treat us so badly. They said, no. The perfect thing is to stay in America and not be slaves. I get it. So that's where Klal Yisrael was thinking also. And that was not the plan. So I think when Moshe Rabbeinu shows up and says like this, I got a package deal over here. The idea is we're going to stop the slavery and I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim and we're going to take you to Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Avos Chol Udvash, and along the way you're going to get the Torah and Har Sinai and all the rest of it. Kotzer Ruach. You know, their vision, their Ruach was too short. That is to say, that was too much for them. We don't need all that. To walk through a desert, they didn't know it was going to be Mon. Who wants to walk through a desert, you know, Nochash, Sarif, Akrov? They didn't know that. They said, let's stay in Egypt. It's a civilized country. It's a well-developed country. They've been in Goshen and such places. Let's just go back to what it was not that long ago, before we were enslaved. You understand? So in the time of my grandparents or great parents or whatever it is, 80 years ago, things were great. You could live in the country and, you know, nobody bothered you. And we did pretty well. And we even, you know, learned Egyptian and all the rest of it. The same way, I'm sorry to say, many people now in America are saying like this. Oh, I remember 40, 50 years ago before all this Arab stuff started. It was like a paradise. You could be as Jewish as you want and so on and so forth. I get it. Believe me, I lived it. But I'm just saying, that was not the agenda. And that's why it was necessary in Pesach to cause the Jews to leave the country, because by the time you finish with the Makkos Bechoris, Mitzrayim said, get the heck out of here. It wasn't simply that, okay, we're going to emancipate you, and now you'll stay here and you won't be slaves. Right? We'll give you, you know, free rights, all the rest of it. They said, no, get out of here. You understand? And I'm sure a lot of Jews tell you, no, 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 I don't want to leave. I just want to not be a slave. You see? And so, that's the idea of Ela Hotzei Kadosh Baruch Hu Zatzei Mi Mitzrayim. If God hadn't taken us out of the Mitzrayim, in the sense of what I just said, to physically take you out of Egypt in order to culturally get you out of Egypt and get out in the desert where you're your own, you're not near anybody else, then we would still be Meshubit to that culture, because that's what you call it, Meshubit. What do you call those Jews who say, I can't leave, I'm too stuck to my family, my house, my automobile, my business, my other, you're Meshubit, right? Why don't you tell somebody, listen, get out of here and let that all go because the Nazis are taking over or something like that. No, but I can't leave this, I can't leave that. So you're Meshubit. You're not free. A free person walks away, a smart free person, says like this, yes, I have $1 million over here, but since it's going to cause me to go down, I'm abandoning it all because better I should survive with my life. This is the Kotzer Ruach that, you know, they couldn't see that far. You understand? Couldn't see that far. So it's just interesting to me, when you consider the time elements, it's perfectly understandable. It hadn't been that long since the Jews had been in Egypt, and had been in Egypt for quite a while, and were doing very well, thank you. Part of the issue, you know, I mean, they were doing fine, financially and otherwise. It's only, you know, subsequent events brought about the enslavement of Egypt. So when it says in the Ten Commandments, Anokhi Hashem Alkach Asher Tzeisichem Eretz Mitzrayim, when we base Avodi, first had to come to the Eretz Mitzrayim part. In other words, had to get you to agree to leave the country, which is, you know, 80% in. So that tells us something about the 80%. And that is their idea, which is makes total sense. Their idea was, we don't have to leave Egypt. It's not, no, it doesn't have to be necessarily that they said we want to assimilate into Egypt. You know, that's up for discussion. I've presented both sides of that over the years. That's up for discussion. But it could easily be that the B'nai Yisrael, it's like this, we want to be Jewish in Egypt. Like somebody says today, I want to be a Jewish in America. Right? Doesn't want to go to Israel. You know, you get it. Maybe you're thinking of your economic situation, whatever the case is. But on Pesach, we emphasize, Meretz Yisrael will be Pesach worthy. There has to be a double business. Meaning, you won't really get Egypt out of your system until you know, are detached from it for a long period of time and people no longer remember or know what Egypt was like. That's probably why it says in the Chumash, this one of 613 mitzvahs, don't ever go back to Egypt. There's something about the Jews when they get to Egypt, it just bowls them over. You know what I'm saying? Certainly in those days, but it's a din in the Torah. It just bowls them over. And next thing you know, you're Meshubadim Leparim, that's right. So, the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu, the first 80 years of his life, was taking place in a very unusual, interesting time. The killing of the babies seems to have stopped. Financially, it doesn't make sense to keep killing the babies, because slave is a free labor. So it's you want more slaves, do more free labor. So the people were not being killed. But they were being, enslaved, exploited in their terms of their labor. I mean, I get that. I understand that. They were exploited in terms of their labor. So then, you don't want to throw all the babies in the river. You see? And so Moshe lives through a time when there's an expanding population of slaves in Egypt. I don't know, and nobody knows how he viewed this whole business. All we know from the Chumash is the burning bush experience, and that takes place when he's around 80 years old, 79 or 80. And it seems he's commissioned by God to say, your job is to get the Jews out of Mitzrayim and out of Beis Avodim. Now, believe me, Moshe, to get them out of Beis Avodim is actually going to be easier than to get them out of Mitzrayim. Beis Avodim, I could just ratchet up the violence against the Egyptians until they give up, which is what he did. Get them out of Mitzrayim, get them out of their head, get Mitzrayim out of their head, that's a little more difficult. And so I think you could ask yourself, who was the Rasha, the four sons? Did the Rasha not want to leave Egypt in the sense he wanted to become a guy? Or did he say, no, I want to leave Egypt, I'm fine over here. I'm fine over here. and he'd be fine with that. Just let me not be enslaved. Let me not be hurting, being, you know, suffering. If I do any suffering, heck with it. No, I'm doing fine. So I think very intelligent conversation tonight at the Seder, if you choose to, would be precisely on this question, you know, would you have been satisfied with Beis Avodim? Or would you want, you say, you know, I want to leave Mitzrayim also? Honestly. Because do you say that about America? Do you say about England? Do you say about other countries? Or do you say, Beis Avodim, I want to get out of. Mitzrayim, I don't want to get out of. You see? And Moshe Rabbeinu, therefore, had a big task on his hands, and a hard job, as we know from reading the Chumash, to keep out of the straight and narrow path, and say that just like we took you out of one, we're going to take you out of the other. I think that's a big theme in the Haggadah, and it follows through in various pages and places in it. And I just wanted to share that. Once again, I wish everybody a good Yontif, both here in Eretz Yisrael, and our sponsors and all the rest of Mishpachas Stefanski. And I hope that we will see good things, that the Medinat Yisrael and Klal Yisrael will see good things this coming Pesach.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.